This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
It's only a preseason game. It's the first one, but we saw a lot of positive signs of the development that seems to be happening with Booker.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
Brady. Couldn't find an open man. He's going to be sacked from behind. Anthony Herron receives credit for it. Tenacious job by Anthony Herron, number 99.
Mr. Hedden, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
Big and Herron on 670 The Score.
We love that music because that means one of our favorite guests is here, and he is also in studio as we broadcast live from the Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is the man, the myth, the legend, the Iowa Hawkeye. He's an analyst for the Score, Fox 32, and the Big Ten Network. It is Anthony Herron, Quadzilla.
I just want to point out, when the music pops like that, and before I ever worked at 670 The Score, I would always imagine that they literally pop the trunk and you would pop out, like ready to engage.
Quadzilla, though. Me and Marshall were just talking about back squats during the commercial break. Man, you might be doing too much. I don't know, because my quads are not nearly as massive as they used to. Still difficult to buy off the rack, you know, for stuff to fit correctly.
not NFL size, but they're not NFL size.
Not anymore. But it's been a minute since I put some weight on a bar and put it over my shoulders
onto my
back.
And decided to go down and come back up with it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just be careful. That's all I'll say.
I'm being careful. That's why, I'm not squatting for at least 2 weeks.
For those of you who don't know, Marshall has a knee brace on.
Hey. Guess who else has a knee brace on?
But
I've definitely earned my knee brace, man. You should not be walking around here back squatting with knee braces on.
Listen,
you're doing too much.
Maybe I'm not doing enough. How about that?
Okay.
As far as preventive maintenance.
You know what? You might be on to something there. Yeah,
that's all I'm saying. But you know what? I don't think the Bears are doing enough.
Well, yeah, but hold on here. If we're going to get into the olds and the injuries,
right.
I thought he had bursitis.
No, I didn't have bursitis.
Oh, okay.
Quadriceps tendonitis. I'll be fine. It's acute quadriceps tendonitis.
Just itises all over
itises.
The place.
Yes. Yes. Got a case of that itis.
But I'm wide awake. I don't have the itis. I'm wide awake. Because you got to be wide awake. When Anthony Herron graces us in real life with his presence, you got to be wide awake.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering.
What's up?
If you thought and you agree with the protocol that the Bears have now rolled out here for at least preseason game number one, with the 87 plays prior to the game for Caleb Williams and the fellow starters, followed by the game, followed by more practice for the guys who didn't play in the game the next day on a Monday.
I mean, they're at least trying to maximize even what I guess for a lot of teams would be considered downtime, because about half the league is doing it, one way, half the league is doing it the other way, where, we don't play the starters in the opener, we rest. And it's about sort of, preventative maintenance. We were just talking about that with the knee. You're trying to mitigate risk by not putting your guys out there. But at some point, especially when you do still have young, developing talent, not just at quarterback, at wide receiver, I want to see Rome Odunze and see how he's responding to some live reps as well. There's a number of guys that I'm curious what the stimulus will do for them. If you're telling me Jaquan Brisker's being held out because we don't need a lot of extra impact from him, let's wait until these games count. I'm with that. But at some point, I'm hoping and I'm anticipating that we'll see it in preseason game number two. Back in my day, it was 4 preseason games, maybe 5 if you had the Hall of Fame game. Now you got 3 opportunities to at least get some true live work, some work that's not scripted, some reps against the opponent that is not in a controlled environment. And I do think this is a team that will benefit from that, and I anticipate seeing it. So, I don't have a big problem with it, but if I were the head coach of the squad, I just left Colts camp yesterday, Indianapolis. It sounds like they're going to have their guys out there all 3 games if they're healthy, because as Chris Ballard just told me yesterday, you get better at playing football by playing football, and I'm all for it.
He has some old school, I think, approaches when it comes to just traditional, I feel like, things that people of our age, for example, grew up with when it came to a lot of the football philosophy. What brought you out there?
I was there for SiriusXM NFL Radio, and it's the second year in a row I've been out there. And of course, Anthony Richardson is, one of these guys going into year 3, immense physical stature, arm strength, mobility, everything, you would kind of hope for a quarterback, but he just hadn't done it that much. And, we even talk about it from the Caleb Williams perspective with the Bears by comparison to his contemporaries, where Bo Nix has just had a lot more starts in major college football before coming to the league last year. Same with Jaden Daniels, fifth-year guys who started dozens and dozens of games. So they were just kind of more ready for primetime stepping into the league by comparison to Caleb, who still just hasn't had all those thousands of hours to turn a lot of things into muscle memory and to be calm, you know, under duress in a way that guys who've just done it more have. Anthony Richardson is even way further down the scale just from a reps perspective. But it was interesting just being there in Westfield, Indiana, and just watching, even comparing last year with this year for Anthony Richardson. You know, he did at, what, I think it was like 11 games he started for them last season, only four from his rookie year. You are seeing some development that's there. He does seem like he can pass the ball with more nuance as opposed to just being this big guy with a big arm just trying to throw the ball through everybody. You can see him processing that. He credits Matthew Stafford with that. It's fun now just hearing so many of the young quarterbacks in the sport now, and they put Matthew Stafford on a certain pedestal as a guy who's got as live an arm as you could hope for, but he's developed throughout his career the ability to process information, the mental aspect of the quarterback position he's gotten so much better at, but then also to be able to throw with anticipation, touch, nuance, turn the nose of the ball over, and things that, you know, as a young guy, you're not necessarily asked to do that as a high schooler, but Stafford has really developed that at a high level, and so many of the young guys throughout the sport kind of have him on a different plane as his ability to pass the football.
When you see what the Bears are doing compared to the other teams, and you say, you know, there's no maybe right or wrong way to do it, does that tell you that you need to give a certain amount of time before you truly evaluate Caleb Williams? I mean, we'll do it along the way, if you will, but I want to know at what point you're like, okay, you need to be this good by this date.
The development arc for Caleb, just going into his second year, it's certainly going to be ongoing, I think, for years at this point because he's such a young football player. But the task they have right now is that this is, what, year four for Ryan Poles. Certainly the first season for Ben Johnson. But you know, you got a roster in place that you've expended capital to be able to bolster the offensive line. You are in this rookie window where you are hoping to be able to maximize how much you have, all these other positions, the D-line, the O-line, the playmakers, the secondary. You're going to have to come up and start paying some of those guys here. So your roster is right now, you're in a position where it can be as deep as it's going to be because a season or two from now, you're hoping you're going to have to pay your quarterback major money and eat up a big chunk of your salary cap. So right now, the position the roster's in should be able to have you, you know, kind of, in some ways, I guess, diminish the importance of the quarterback. And Ben Johnson even said that in that opening press conference, that Caleb is important, but it's not all about Caleb. I'm anticipating we'll actually see that play out at least early in the year. And then as the season progresses, maybe they can put more and more on his shoulders. That's where it does surprise me a little bit that they haven't enhanced the running back room a little bit more and those types of things, because that's certainly a part of this offense is going to have to help carry things.
That's the part that I just does not compute with me. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I know that, number one, a universal truth is a quarterback's best friend is a good running game.
Right.
That will buy him so much time. Like, when you know that you've got that kind of offensive lineman group, and it goes back to just the need they had at the draft. This is who they have now. I understand that part of it. But to invest more in the running back situation when you knew that, like, he's going to be the one under fire for all this, if suddenly they have to pass a lot more than they realize.
And, yeah, to be clear, I did think Kyle Manunga was impressive in the first preseason game. I was happy to see that. He also looked young in certain ways, just like Luther Burden did, just like Ozzie Trapillo did. I mean, you're a rookie getting your first NFL action. You're usually going to look like a rookie, at least at some times, if not for the full game. But at least at running back, and I'll certainly give them, I think, this deference, at running back, that is a spot where you can get away with signing a guy late and just sort of infuse him into portions of the offense and say, you know what, you've run outside zone before. You know what's happening. The verbiage may be a little bit different. Just make sure you get the cadence down, and you can be a guy who's a part of this rushing attack. So it at least is a position where you can bolster your depth even late in camp.
I also want to ask you, though, we talked about it a little bit. 5'8 will show up on a football field. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Kyle Manunga. I also think that pass blocking is going to be something you get as a rookie later in the season and later That's in preseason yeah. than now. What did you think of him in pass blocking responsibilities on Sunday?
A lot of it is about awareness. And, you know, there's certainly a moment that I think a lot of people noticed where, you know, there was a stretch fake and then the quarterback's booting out the back way. And then you get the edge defender who just comes in and, you know, next thing Kamanunga knows, his feet are way above his head. And that's not, it's not a position any football player wants to find themselves in, but that's a lack of awareness. And so even in addition to the stature, just getting that rep in a game, you would imagine he won't be caught slipping like that. And because the speed of the action here, I was just talking to Solomon Wilcox about it yesterday, just looking at everything and how the young guys, there is that transition where you recognize you may think you can blink or you can exhale really quickly in the midst of a snap. And then before you know it, there's some behemoth moving at a million miles an hour. It's just waiting to clean your clock. And so that awareness for Kyle Manunga, even as a guy who's fast and physical, but you can be fast and physical when you know where it's coming from. But then if something's going to catch you off guard, you know, in a proprioceptive sort of way, you have to have your mind ready to kind of, you know, take on different, you know, angles and pursuit of defenders and blocking surfaces that you have to be prepared for. So I think when he was ready for it, he was fine. There are certainly some moments in pass protection where you're going to have a blitzer or an edge defender or defensive tackle just coming from this odd angle. And you've got to be ready to hunker down and take on and meet force with force. And as a rookie, you're just not going to having been put in all those positions yet.
All right, you say that for the running back as we are joined by Anthony Heron here in studio on Raheemi and Harris to talk about all things Bears after they came up with a tie to start off their preseason, which means they still haven't lost in 2025. That's what that means. But Anthony, you're talking about Manungai. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that left tackle position because it was fascinating to see the variety of ways in which both Ozzie Trapillo and Braxton Jones looked and reacted depending on what was going on up front. What was your overall kind of evaluation of what they were doing?
Well, Braxton Jones was fine. I thought Ozzie Trapillo looked like a rookie. And, you know, I'm wondering how, because a lot of their reps have been kind of flopped as Braxton Jones has gotten more involved in 11-on-11 and live and team periods and everything, then they've kind of spent some time flopping them with Trapillo getting some of the team reps with the ones and Jones getting some of the others. It does seem like here as of late, Braxton Jones has been more frequently with the ones on offense, and it doesn't shock me, and it doesn't mean anything negative about Ozzie Trapillo. You know, he was not a top 10 pick as a left tackle. You do have experience available at that spot, and it may just take a few weeks for Trapillo to really showcase himself as a guy who they can trust to protect the blind side of Caleb Williams on a regular basis. But there's still a few weeks left before that first regular season game happens, and there can be a lot of growth from that preseason game one to that preseason game two. I'd like to see him, you know, drop his hips a little bit more. I'd like to see him really get force in the blockers, because at 6'8", it's just hard. It's really difficult to do that. It's one thing to have quick feet, but leverage is so important when you're that tall. And again, just like I was talking about with Kyle Manungai, the speed and the angle that defenders will attack you with and the leverage that they can have. Think about a guy like Grady Jarrett, who's, I mean, when you think about it, probably nearly a foot shorter than a guy like Ozzie Trapillo. So even if he's not a guy who's actually rushing the edge for Ozzie Trapillo, where he's got eyes on him the entire way, but if you got a zone or a scat blocking sort of scheme and you got to overtake a defensive tackle, if his pad level is down around your knees, it's really difficult at that height to be able to sink down and actually get adequate leverage to stop penetration from those types of guys. And those are situations that you can recognize and adjust your angle and recognize how you need to sort of situate your body pre-snap to get where you need to get. And sometimes it's just about, you know, continued physical maturity that it can take to really be in those positions also. And for Trapillo, it's probably going to be a combination of the two, but, you know, neither guy I would expect to just be holding down the left tackle position in a really staunch way right from game number one. But at least with Braxton Jones, you know the ceiling, you know the floor. He can play winning level football. And at some point, the hope can be that Trapillo will overtake him.
And how confident are you in what you've seen so far about knowing what this offense is going to look like, at least to start the season?
Yeah, that it's a tough one because it's the one preseason game. We've seen the practices. And what's as important as anything for Ben Johnson in working with not only Caleb Williams, but this offense as a whole. Like, I love the amount of time that DJ Moore's been getting in the backfield, because he throughout his entire time in Chicago has showcased kind of a, you know, a Debo sort of skill set. I think I told you guys frequently last year, he's really got more of a running back type of build and route running, and even the way he receives the football. He's not some kind of natural hands catcher that stretches his arms out and just plucks the ball naturally in flight. He's more of a body catcher, and he's been a high-level receiver, but he's really more of a playmaker as a wideout. Just get the rock in his hands, and it doesn't have to be on a nine route or a crosser or anything else. If you want to hand him the rock in the backfield, especially as the running back room is situated right now, not a lot of guys who are more capable with the football in their hands to make something big happen than DJ Moore. So I love that they've discovered that. They seem to be looking to accentuate that. But as much as anything, as much as the playbook that Ben Johnson wants to throw at Caleb Williams, he's got to make sure he's accentuating what Caleb can do well. And I would imagine that that's what this process continues to be about right now. Yeah, we're throwing it all at you. What do you do well? What are you least comfortable with? And then we can make sure that what's highlighted in our game plan on a weekly basis are the things you can do best.
DJ Moore is their best playmaker. The resume is the resume. My question is, how many times do you want to see DJ Moore touch the football? Because last year, that number varied, and it wasn't good.
Yeah, and part of that is just about how's the offense rolling. You know, can you get away with saying, yeah, we're going to have more drop back in a certain game and trust that it'll be distributed properly? Or if you're not getting that from the quarterback or from the pass protection, do we have to manufacture additional touches for DJ Moore? Because then you also have Colston Loveland, who seems like he'll be impressive with the ball in his hands. And you hope that Rome Odunze becomes a real threat with the football in his hands. So some of this is hope. But then also, like we were just talking about a moment ago, Layla, this run game is going to have to lead the way. And DeAndre Swift, he may not be a 20-plus carry a game guy between the tackles, but he is also a touchdown waiting to happen when you get him in space.
That is Anthony Herron alongside Marshall Harris and me, Layla Rahimi. We have more with Ant coming up in our next segment. We're looking forward to it. And until then, we have another giveaway for you. We've got something for you. Caller 6 to the Score contest line, 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of general admission tickets to see Blink 182, Weird Al Yankovic, Alkaline Trio, Rilo Kiley, The Pogues, and more at Riot Fest on Friday, September 19th. I know you want the Riot Fest tickets. I know you do. We want to go over some audio with Ant that Robbie Triano called radio porn.
Okay.
So,
is it Weird Al? Are
no,
we gonna get weird?
But look at his hat. So you know it's involving Ben Johnson's former team.
Yeah.
It is worth a discussion though, and just more talk about what happened with the Bears on Sunday. That is next with Anthony Herron, Marshall Harris, and you on the Score.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's an appropriate piece of music for how Robbie described what we are about to hear. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. We are happy to be joined by the former NFLer, Anthony Herron, Iowa Hawkeye, works for us, works for Fox 32, the Big Ten Network, and Sirius XM Radio.
Man, got like 8 jobs.
I feel like that
probably covered them all.
You in football season, I feel like you're working 99 hours a day and you have like 12 jobs each.
It goes from 0 to 60. Just the last couple of months have been as serene as life could get, whether it's been out of the country, back in this country. Now football season's here, so it's nonstop body rock.
You don't even have a ramp up here. You just go.
Got to, man.
We got to bring him back, ramp him up. No.
There is no ramp up.
Pads.
Get right there.
Ant is locked in. He knows what he's doing. I think there was no better example than watching you and Luke and Allison, Cassie Carlson on the Fox 32 postgame show. We talked about Austin Booker and how he has grown, and I know it's something you and I talked about a little bit on Twitter on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I really liked how you used Lou as a tackling dummy example, but I would like you to expand for us.
Okay.
What you said about the angles at which Booker was using to pursue and the moves he was using at the line of scrimmage to be able to show that growth that you describe.
Well, what has me hopeful is that there were a variety of ways he got to the quarterback in the game on Sunday, because once we got to the regular season last year, Austin Booker spent a lot of time just rushing into the body of blockers and staying down the middle of blockers. And what you get into is really more often a young football player than anything. You kind of attack that blocking surface initially, and then you're just kind of looking around trying to find the ball, and you forget to actually defeat the blocker that's there. So when the ball gets snapped, really your main goal should be, How do I defeat this blocker within my responsibility for the scheme that's called here? And that's where just experience, and some guys are just more adept at it than others, but hopefully through experience, that's where Austin Booker is getting to, where now, at least in the game on Sunday, you saw where the ball got snapped. He was getting into the pads of blockers, but not staying down the middle. Getting to the outside half, like as you look at, you know, blocker, if you just kind of cut an offensive tackle down the middle, you get to the shoulder blade, and you get to the outer tip of the shoulder, you get to the hip, and he was getting to the outside half, outside third of blockers more effectively. But even when he did at times get into the guy's pads and start down the middle of a blocker, it was with a plan and with a purpose and getting to the edge after kind of shocking that blocker initially, then getting off of that block, eluding them to get to the corner. What I would love to see is just him to get to the point sometimes where he recognizes he seems to have enough burst and elusiveness to never even touch a blocker sometimes. You know, you watch like tapes of Von Miller or some of the great like finesse speed rushers. They're like an old like Bruce Lee movie where you're just being like water. You know, you're just showing that fluidity, just showing some moves, showing some burst and dipping that shoulder and just running the edge around guys. You get speed in their feet. Or if you're really doing it right, they don't even touch you sometimes when you're really rushing with the proper angle and lean. I would love to see Austin Booker progress to that point because that's where you know you're really starting to cook as an edge rusher, where you have that feel for the snap count and the angle that you can attack a guy's outside hip with where they don't even touch you. You don't do a thing with your hands because you know you've just got him off the snap. I feel like he's got that in his bag somewhere right now, even though he's not a guy who's, you know, really hulking, like I was saying to Lou in the post game. He loves to get into a guy's pads first, which is not a bad mentality to be in. But I wonder if his off-speed pitch can be just full-on fury off the snap, just getting speed in the feet of that tackle and running by him.
I wonder, because we saw flashes of this in the last preseason,
right,
but we were told, hey, this is a developmental guy, fifth-round pick. It's going to take him some time. He's undersized, obviously. He's very young, so he hasn't grown into his full adult body. What makes you think that this year is going to be any different as far as the preseason translating into the regular season for Austin Booker?
I don't yet.
Oh,
but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. You know, it's that one preseason game. Now, last preseason, there were a few glimpses of him evading blockers and using two-way goals. I mean, sensational spin move he had the other day on what I think was maybe his second sack. You know, showcasing a wide variety of moves, you know, more tools as a pass rusher is a great thing. I want to see him start to compile those performances, though. And, you know, like hand up for me as a football player, as a defensive lineman, one of my biggest deficiencies was that I wanted to be so assignment conscious. And I feel like that's where Austin Booker is right now. He's like, all right, I got to make sure I hit this block. I got to make sure I set this edge, because if I don't, then I can be overwhelmed physically because I'm not the biggest, strongest defensive end out here. And he's so focused on getting into the pads of guys. But when you can flip that switch just kind of into playmaker mode, and again, he's a late round draft pick, he's a young football player, so it's not an easy switch to flip, but he's got the physical tools to do that on occasion. If the coach calls you into it, that's one thing. But Austin Booker's not a guy who the coaches are going to call into a bunch of playmaking. Every once in a while, though, just say, you know what, I think I got this guy on his heels a little bit. I feel like I've set him up for something where maybe I'll go ahead and take this two-way go. If you go make the play, you're not going to get in a lot of trouble on film if you make that play. So there's a risk, you know, cost-benefit analysis you got to go through with some of that. But sometimes when you've got that physical ability to do it, then you really benefit your ability to kind of hit a block later on, because now they're not flying off the ball with that blood in their fingertips just knowing that you're just going to meet force with force every time.
We're talking to former NFL defensive lineman Anthony Heron here on Raheem and Harris on The Score. Kind enough to join us in studio. I want you to listen to this piece of audio we got recently.
Okay.
Robbie found this for us because it's from Detroit. It's Dan Campbell talking to ABC7 there about losing Ben Johnson to come here.
Is there a bit of an edge to you at all this year with so much written about the coordinators leaving? An edge to you maybe to prove to everybody that you're still the head coach of this team, that you're still at the helm of this for 5 years, and that there shouldn't be concern?
Well, I think, man, it's not hard for me to find things that can drive you. I mean, I feel like that's the world we're in. That's how I was as a player. That's how I am as a coach. Like, I'll pull anything negative because it motivates me. So I would be lying if I said, no, that doesn't get me going a little bit. You know, that's the next challenge. So, yeah, I'm excited about it.
Ben's great. Aaron's great.
No doubt.
But is there part of you that says, I've been here the whole time steering this ship as well.
Well, I think the important thing is, and what I wanted to start this thing off with, and us and the group of people we're with, is, man, it takes a village. And if you want your team to play like a team, then we have to function like a team as coaches, as GM, head coach, ownership, management. And I think that's important. So what we do as a team. And I've said this before, man, if I really did this right, I should be able to just leave and these guys don't miss a beat. I think if you really do your job, that can happen.
Is there a rivalry already starting with Ben? Like at the owners' meetings, coaches' meetings at all, where you're tying his shoes under the table, trying to make a tip out of himself?
Double knotting him under there? No. No, it's good. Actually, I saw him a couple of times in passing, and, man, we're good. Relationship's good, but, you know, it's no different than anything else. Like when we play each other, look, it's the next game, and we want to win, man. They're in our division, and I want to beat them. We want to beat them. I'm sure they want to beat us, right? There's no secret there. But no, I mean, it doesn't matter who we're playing. Mm-hmm. We're out for blood.
It's that in part that I think got the Robster fired up, wasn't it?
We're out for blood.
Well, I feel like this should be more of a rivalry between the Lions and the Bears. And also now with Ben Johnson leaving Detroit to over here, I think it should be, besides the Packers games, this should be the biggest game in rivalry on the Bears schedule.
Besides the Packers game.
That's clear the number one. I think even as a Lions fan, I hate the Packers more than I hate the Bears.
Listen, I get it. As a Lions fan, you're like, we want to be on the same level as the Packers. Like, they weren't, like, you know, 0-16 some years ago. We know the history of the Lions. That's why you're not the Packers.
But also, like, as a Detroit fan, like, the whole offseason I've heard, oh, Detroit's going down because Ben Johnson came over here. That was a clip that made me feel like, all right, yeah, bring it on. Like, we still have our head coach. Like, yes. You do have one of the best play callers in the entire NFL, but that made me so much more confident that we're going to kick everyone else's ass.
Help you have out. Aiden Hutchinson coming back.
We can have a lot of people coming
back.
Can
we just note the obvious here? Like, you have 15 other dudes who are coming out of
injury
reserve.
It was the brain drain that was what people have been like clamoring about this team.
Well, Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson got head coaching jobs for a reason, Anthony. And I think to sit here and act like what their head coach Dan Campbell said about, oh, I should just be able to leave and you guys should just keep it running. That doesn't sound pragmatic to me.
Well, first off, remind me, whose movie was Out for Blood? Was it Van Damme? Was it Stallone? Somebody, was it Seagal?
I think it was Van Damme, wasn't
Steven,
it?
Somebody had an Out for Blood.
Wasn't it Bloodsport was Van Damme?
But yeah, his first big one was definitely Bloodsport. But I'm trying. Somebody had a movie
had
Out for Blood.
Blood.
I remember it was Steven Seagal or
it's
somebody.
Steven Seagal.
Okay, there we go.
Wait,
Steven Seagal.
Is it Steven Seagal?
An attorney is forced to fight back after his family is brutally murdered by vicious drug dealers,
really?
Leading to an astounding martial arts showdown.
Yeah, that's Marshall.
And the star was Steven Seagal.
No, it was Don Wilson, according to this.
Really?
I'm looking at the.
I thought it was somebody
7
more
out of 10 out of IMDb.
Wow, you
score.
Pulled that one out of nowhere.
I knew there was some film Out for Blood. I couldn't remember who the star was, but for Dan Campbell, because he's never been a play caller. So, you know, when you're a coordinator on either side of the ball and you have success, then there's this automatic assumption of your genius. So when you get that head coaching opportunity, then everybody says, just like Ben Johnson, we here in the city of Chicago said, all right, he was the genius in Detroit, so now he'll come here, and now we have stolen Detroit's genius, and so everything's going to be fine, and it's everybody else's fault until we realize, just like we realize at some point with Matt Nagy, or realize at some point with Matt Eberflus, like there are times when the coordinator comes here, and you're kind of like, oh, maybe they weren't such a genius. So we'll wait and see what happens with Ben Johnson, because he's never been a head coach before. Dan Campbell was the man running the show in Detroit, so you hope that what Ben Johnson did, all that success he had as an offensive play caller, and whatever's been sprinkled on him from other head coaches he's worked with, and then his own personality infused into the Bears, that he knows exactly what he's doing. But likely he will have to learn on the job as well. Just like Dan Campbell did, he got the ship right. Things started rolling in Detroit. You lose both coordinators. That is definitely a big deal. But because Dan Campbell was not a coordinator and he doesn't present himself as some high intellect, then I do think there's an assumption that, all right, he's going to have to figure something else out because he lost the smart guys.
He snows them like that, man. Like, if you, it's just like Pat Murphy over here with his pancakes in his pocket and whatnot. They all shucks him to death. And then the next thing you know, you've got this 750 win percentage.
And we're out for blood. That.
Pat Murphy got his blood. He's rolling right now.
Okay, but who are the Bears to the Lions the biggest rival right now?
Ooh, oh, the Packers are our number one rival for sure, but I definitely think Bears are easily the number two right now, and I think because Ben Johnson is here, we want to beat you guys even more.
How do the Vikings just skate by? Nobody hates the Vikings.
Yeah, the Vikings, they're not a threat. They're not a threat.
Are the Bears a threat? Are the Vikings?
There's a lot of folks who hate the Bears without them being a threat.
They hate the idea of Chicago because it's a bigger city. Right. You're in its shadow.
As we see in a variety of walks of life, folks are going to look for reasons to poke at Chicago.
Mecca of the West. True. Same reason people on the East Coast hate New York. It's the same types of things. Chicago's just the biggest fish in this particular pond.
Is it because of the little brown jug, per se?
Yeah.
Or is it because little of Floyd of Rosedale?
Don't start getting my blood boiling.
Do you think it has more to do with the college game than the Vikings waging war from the 90s, and that's still a thing, you know?
It's the fake crowd noise. They used to pump fake crowd noise into the, Metrodome. Yeah, they would pump that fake crowd noise into the Metrodome. We'd be looking around like, wait a minute, there's not that many people in here. But it would just sound deafeningly loud, whether they're doing it for Vikings games, for Gophers games.
Yeah, I was there for the Minnesota game. They did that. It did not work out well. Some team named North Dakota State got the win. When I was a sideline reporter at the Big Ten Network, I was like, oh, that's probably not how you thought this game was going to go.
Hey, that was quite the dynasty and run for North Dakota State.
It was. And it just goes to show you that it's more than just like your team is this all-powerful team. Mm. Other teams can beat you. You just need new leaders like what Chicago's hoping with Ben Johnson to be the guy that forges this new path.
Hey, it's all good to be hopeful, but got to prove it on the job to me. It's the first time he's had this job.
So I just heard Ann say that Floyd is going to the Hawkeyes.
No, I was going to say, for Ben Johnson, it sounds like you're where I am, where I was like, I'm going to need you to show me in the regular season, over the course of a season, that you can lead a team to the playoffs before we anoint you anything.
Right. I mean, you know, like I mentioned, I was at Colts camp again this year, and Shane Steichen's got a 500 record through two seasons. A lot of teams would be okay with a 500 record through two seasons. He's at least shown that he can have a team surge late in the year. There's a thought that as an offensive mind, he'll help with the quarterback development. But right now, Ben Johnson has never had an opportunity to coach a regular season game in the National Football League. And what's really paramount amongst all this to me, like, you think if we put a guy like John Gruden on the pedestal of like QB development because of so much that he's done in the TV world, and he can communicate offensive play and skill position play and QB play in a very thought-provoking and entertaining manner. John Gruden as a coach never developed a young quarterback to any real success. It's a different muscle that you're really flexing as a coach when that's the case. So Ben Johnson had a veteran in Jared Goff come into Detroit, and he took him to the highest heights he had ever seen as a player, a quarterback, a playmaker. He's never developed a young QB. I'm hopeful he'll be able to do it, but there's no proof right now in his resume that he can.
I have more confidence in him than the previous guy.
Agreed.
Yes.
Very much agreed.
There's a myriad of reasons to show it. And yes, that is legal. You can say a myriad of.
But it has
to be the A and the of.
Okay. Didn't realize that.
Taking some DNA from our old midday show.
I like
it. Just saying. We have more coming up here on Raheem and Harris with Anthony Heron on 670 The Score. We got into a heated debate in Vive on it.
Oh, my goodness.
It started
because you're ridiculous.
It started with what Noah Sewell had to give up, and then it just went haywire. So, naturally, we want to bring you in.
All right. I'm with it.
So, Ant's thoughts on the giving up of M&Ms and cereal takes. Yup. Yeah. Yeah. You hear that, Gaz?
Get your takes ready.
Next.
You're listening to Raheem and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Did you cut anything out of the diet that you missed?
M&M's. Missed the M&M's. Yeah, that's about it.
Poor Noah Sewell having to give up M&M's. This is Raheem and Harris with Ann Heron in the studio. We're like a little old school Slim Shady.
Yeah.
So we got into a pretty big debate on our Five on It segment.
We
talked about being able to give up a certain food.
Mm.
What would you give up? We got into cereal, and Marshall's like, I would give up, and then he named like the wildest cereals possible.
No, it was just cereal is about sugar.
Like stuff you don't eat?
Yeah, stuff I don't eat anymore.
Well, okay, yeah. That kind of skirts the actual intent of the game then.
No. I'm saying we were naming things that we have given up.
Oh, okay.
That we have given up, much in the same... Well, it started... Before we do that, though, what's the superior M&M?
I mean, do they really taste that different?
Oh, okay. We got a different take here. So not, you know, no difference between
it's
regular
chocolate covered peanut,
plain peanut butter. There's the pretzel one.
Maybe I just devour them too quickly to really discern how one color tastes versus the other one.
I could see it.
Put several of them in at the same time. In that respect.
Okay, like, so you're just any M&Ms are good M&Ms.
I mean, yeah, whether you go peanut or peanutless.
Okay,
you're, really you're one or zero. Either you're having M&Ms or
binary.
You're not.
It's very binary. Right, so right. So that's one thing. But then we started talking about cereal, and I was like, I would just, you know, I gave up cereal because I realized they're just sugar bombs. That are disguised as something healthy, but they're not healthy. It's sugar. Like Apple Jacks is my favorite cereal. Frosted Flakes, Honey Nut Cheerios. You can go down the list. And then Layla, play the sound, Robbie.
Cracklin' Oat Bran, man.
What are you talking about? You can't.
What the hell?
Cracklin' Oat Bran.
Is that like, that's your vice? That's your guilty pleasure?
No, Cracklin' Oat Bran. I love that cereal. No, I actually said that the thing I needed to give up was Wheat Thins.
Layla looks up in the cabinet. Box of Cracklin' Oat Bran is empty. She immediately just starts scratching her neck. Like, wait, I can't do this.
Seriously, I will. It's
going through withdrawal.
It's an expensive cereal, and I will.
Well,
ration out the portions in the boxes.
That's the other thing.
It tastes
all
like an oatmeal
super
cookie.
Expensive.
Now, I mean, I got to admit, the cereal I eat most is Special K. So I get about as bland.
As a kid, though?
No, as a grown-up.
When you were a kid.
Oh, no.
When I was a kid. Up to the cartoons.
When I was a kid, it was Apple Jacks. So Golden Grahams. We used to be a big Golden Grahams house.
Golden Grahams was so
and
good.
And then we had an incident with a box of Golden Grahams.
What was the incident with the box of Golden Grahams?
I mean, there was some stuff in the box of Golden Grahams that wasn't supposed to be in there. And it just soured our entire family. We never bought a box of Golden Grahams again.
We have to reveal what was in that box of Golden Grahams.
It was alive. It was, yeah.
Ew.
So we were traumatized by the Golden Grahams and have never, no one in our immediate family has ever purchased a box of Golden Grahams ever again.
What about Life cereal? Where does Life cereal stand on the Golden Grahams spectrum?
I tried it between Life. Wheaties. I've tried before, and it's just
what was that called
didn't
again?
Do it for me. Wheaties.
Wheat Thins.
Wheaties. I don't know. I didn't enjoy it. Didn't enjoy that experience. So I've, you know, the box of Wheaties and how much of it. It's kind of the icon for an athlete to hit the cover of the box of Wheaties. But
well, that's what they
good.
Had to do because there was no actual flavor in the Wheaties compared to the Frosted Flakes. Like, do you understand
shredded
eating
wheat?
Frosted Flakes and then eating anything after Frosted Flakes? The lack of sugar alone will make you be like, as a child. Now, as an adult, you have more. You have more of a palate. But as a kid, sugar good, everything else bad.
So at least with like the cornflakes, I slice up some bananas and put those in the cornflakes or something just to enhance it a little bit.
Bananas and the Rice Krispies was always
right,
a good one.
Right.
But every cereal I've named has like no sugar and Marshall's just disturbed. I mean, I had sugar cereal, but just not very often.
You had the taste of an 80-year-old grandmother age of seven.
I ate grape nuts.
Were you like a Cocoa Krispies
guy? When I got into high school, I ate grape nuts. I've lost my edge, man. I used to be hard. I've gotten soft in my
The good thing about grape nuts is they don't get soggy. They just kind of roll.
They were practical. I don't know. Everything was practical.
I mean, it's basically having like, what's the bag with all the different nuts and the raisins and everything? Trail mix. Yeah, it's basically like eating trail mix with milk in it. I think that's what that sounds
that
like.
That sounds
to me.
Unappealing.
Well, so compared does, to like every cereal that Layla just mentioned also sounds unappealing.
And then he found out that also as a teenager, I didn't put syrup on my pancakes. And it wasn't because I didn't like sweets. I love sweets.
Okay.
But just for whatever reason, I thought the pancakes were good enough without it.
So I asked her, I was like, so what did you put on? He's like, a pat of butter. I was like, that's not no.
I was not on a diet by any means. I just want to make that very clear.
When you go to the restaurants now, though, and they put like the half a pound, they get like the ice cream scooper
too much.
Of butter and put it on the top. And then there's the big dent in all of the pancakes that are there because that heavy blob of butter is just weighing everything down.
I scoop it off and put it to the side.
Yeah, I do the same. Like, I don't mind butter, but they're doing way too much with that.
This just means we need to go to Wildberry. It's like in the building, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Wildberry's a good call.
We need a show meeting at Wildberry.
We go right now.
Hell yeah.
Except I'm not done anyway,
it closes
right?
at 2. That's the only reason.
Okay, we can't go right
now. You're good on brunch times.
You know I know. Because you know I like me some food in the middle of the day.
Marshall and I used to go to brunch
before,
in Philly.
Before after the back squats.
You're so disappointed in him.
Yeah. And you probably weigh yourself every day, too. You're doing that also.
This all started with the gout, and we got rid of the gout outbreaks, and now we're good. Now we're clean because I work out and I monitor my health. There's nothing wrong with that.
You and Gabe,
I do
man.
Not apologize.
Gabe Ramirez. I was constantly trying to tell Gabe, man, stop weighing yourself every day.
No, I'm going to weigh myself, and if I had it.
You don't.
I might.
Every day?
You know what I've been thinking about? Yeah, Layla does it too.
How much fluctuation can there really be from one day
it's
to the next?
It's about progress over time. And if you do it
so
every day.
With me right now, there's zero fluctuation. And I would like there to be some negative.
Anthony, if you do it every day, you can chart the progress of, say, a month, 2 months, 3 months, because you've done it every day. And it also keeps you in the mindset of being mindful of it. You don't be obsessed with it, but just be mindful. Hey, I put
every
on a
day
couple.
Sounds like you're obsessed with it.
No.
That's what it sounds like to me. I don't own a scale, by the way, if that matters.
Okay, I'm looking to buy a body scan, like for the full everything.
Like they got the airport?
Yeah, for the fat and muscle and all.
Oh, okay.
It's fun to listen to the former professional athlete tell Marshall.
He doesn't have
doing
real problems
much.
Like that.
Every
he's a former
day,
professional
man.
Athlete. He can't imagine the
doing
civilian's
way
too life.
Much.
You
way
can't imagine much. The civilian life.
Once a week, you weigh yourself every day. Stop weighing yourselves every day, Twitch mob.
Wow.
Words to live
message
by.
For the mob.
I mean, he has a point. The man had to deal with his body for work.
I can understand why it's traumatizing to him, but I'm not there yet.
Well, those are good words from Anthony Heron to close out the show. Lawrence Holmes and Matt Spiegel are next. Ant, thank you so much for hanging. This was fun.
My
appreciate you.
Pleasure. I'll be on with early with Mully on Friday, by the way.
Oh, you're doing the morning
shift? Yeah,
shifts?
Yeah. Hall decided to take, I don't know, eons off from work or something like that.
Just because he has two jobs doesn't mean it's more time. It's just more shows.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Ant. We appreciate it so much.
Later.
Always good to see Anthony Heron. Like we mentioned, Spiegel and Holmes are next.